Welcome to the War Report on Public Education. The future of education is an important concern for our time. Where it's heading, how it's evolving, and the influence corporate America has on its outcome. The War Report on Public Education provides critical news, analysis, and perspectives on the what, why, who, where, when, and how of both the new corporate state elites campaign, the Machiavellian agenda to destroy the nation's public education system, and the rising public resistance movement to defend and defeat this Machiavellian agenda. And now, here is our host, Dr. James Avington Miller, Jr.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the War Report. And for those of you, this is your first time, we welcome you as well. Today's show is something that basically came up just a few 9 days ago as one of the hottest issues in public education, and it resulted in me making a decision to do a show today as opposed to continuing with the series that we were working on Common Core. And so that decision was based upon what is one of the more important philosophies of the War Report is we seek to discuss or have conversation around the most salient issues involved in public education. And we also seek to get the best person or group representative to have a conversation about that important issue. And so today we're going to be operating, of course, within that vein. And you know, I'm assuming to some extent, most of you know the issue. I will go over it a little bit in a moment. And our guest today is one of the perhaps one of the best people in the nation to have a conversation about this issue. We're also going to have, hopefully, a couple very important guests who will call in later on during the show to join the conversation. And I'm hoping that we will also have teachers across the country calling in. We've tried to get as many lines available for people to call in, because this is very important. I mean, all the issues are important, we know that, but this is of real importance to us, and I hope to make that importance better known and understood as we go along with the show. So, with that in mind, I'm going to contradict myself, and I'm going to introduce our guest, who I discovered had never listened to the show. And I end up inviting her anyway? Wow. I mean, what was I thinking? But anyway, I'm going to, and stop laughing over there, I'm going to bring in our guest. She is Adele Cawthorn. She is all but dissertation, AZB. That's the status that we confer on people who are just a stone's throw away from getting their doctorate. That is perhaps my only compliment, because she didn't listen to the show previously. So with that, stop laughing, Adele. With that, I introduce you folks to Adele. Hi, Adele.
Well, I don't know whether to be flattered or not, but I am still flattered. Good afternoon. How are you?
I'm okay. I'm still trying to get over you not having listened to the show previously.
But yeah, you get.
I'm never gonna let you forget this. So.
But you get
throughout
the next
show
hour,
and afterwards.
You get the next hour to spend with me, and you know, I've said it before, and I promise you, I will become one of your new lifelong listeners. That is a guarantee.
See, that's what happens when you're almost at the PhD level. You learn how to sling it, like, you know, we do who have it. So anyway, Del, tell us something about your background, which is extensive.
Okay, well, go ahead. Let me start from, I'm notorious in some circles for being the D.C. principal who walked into a situation where she caught some of her staff members allegedly erasing student answers and made the decision to file a whistleblower's lawsuit against D.C. public schools. But more importantly, I am a product of a strong urban education. I like to tell everyone that I am preschool to doctorate, all in an urban education setting, which is why I am such a strong advocate for a stellar, meaningful urban education for all children.
And how long have you been teaching? What grade levels did you teach?
I actually taught K through 6 because I went into this very strategic. I knew that I wanted to be a principal. My mother loves to share the story that when I was 7 years old, I bounced down the steps and announced to her. She was a single parent. My mom was 15 when she gave birth to me in Baltimore City, so she was definitely my first advocate. But at the age of 7, I bounced down the steps and said to her, "Mommy, I want to be a principal." And she looked at me and said, "Don't you mean you want to be a teacher?" And I said, "Who runs the school?" And she chuckled and said, "You're right. You want to be the principal." So I definitely thought about it. When I was 14, I took a job as a camp counselor because I wanted to make sure that I really loved working with kids, which I did. And so when I actually went into education in 1994, yes, I am dating myself, I made it a plan that I wanted to teach as many grade levels at the elementary level, because once I went into administration, I wanted to be able to speak from a voice of actual experience. So I taught K through 8. I've written national math curriculum. As of late, my last position was with Harvard, and they were actually doing a research program looking at academic vocabulary and debate in Baltimore City schools. So that was my last point of employment, which I enjoyed immensely.
Okay. Tell us a little bit more for now, because I want to come back to this later, about your whistleblowing activity. Just
so
give me the broad outline, because I want to compare that to what's going on in Atlanta a little later on in the show.
So the broad outline is I was actually an administrator in Montgomery County Public Schools. And for those of your listeners who may not be familiar, Montgomery County is right outside of D.C., but it is a extremely wealthy suburb of D.C. So a lot of the politicians and major players actually send their kids to Montgomery County Public Schools because it is a solid school system. So I was an administrator there and had a friend who had left Montgomery County and went into D.C., gave me a call one day and said, "Adele, you would be great in D.C. I know that your doctorate looks at how race impacts learning. You would be a great asset." So basically, Dr. Miller, within a span of a week, I received a phone call, got a phone call back less than 24 hours later, "Please come interview with us." 72 hours later, I was sitting in front of 5 schools for them to interview me. 24 hours later, Michelle Reeves' assistant was calling me saying, "You know, would you please come in to meet with Miss Ree?" And so honestly, Dr. Miller, at that point, I was ecstatic. I had the magazine with Michelle Ree on it. At that point, she was one of my heroes because I believed all of the propaganda. So I meet with Michelle Ree, and she comes in, and we interview in her office, and she says to me, "Adele, it's not a matter of when you're coming to D.C., just where I'm going to put you." Fast forward 2 months later, I am placed at Noyes Education Campus, which was a K through 8 campus, which I love. Begin to, you know, get familiar. This was a blue ribbon school. I had done my due diligence, and the data looked great. You know, reading was in the 80th percentile. Math was in the 70th percentile. So I'm going into this situation saying, "Oh, I can, you know, turn this into a 90-90-90, 90% free reduced lunch, 90% minority population, 90% achievement." That's what I'm thinking with the data that was presented to me. Well,
okay,
one of the things...
Okay, let's stop there. Now let's get to what took place in Atlanta, and then we'll come back.
Okay.
All right. Now, for those of you who are not aware of what took place in Atlanta, and I keep referring to it just as Atlanta, this past, well, April 1st, April Fool's Day, a verdict was handed down from a trial in Atlanta that convicted, found guilty, 11 out of 12 educators who were involved in a massive cheating scandal in the school district there in Atlanta. The verdict was like the shot heard across the country. It was unbelievable. All kinds of explanations started to pop up very briefly, didn't last long. And this is what we are going to talk about, and that is the verdict later on in the show. But let me give you a little more background here. Back in the mid 2005, 6, 7 range, and maybe as late as 2009, the major newspaper there, the Atlanta, I think, Constitutional, Journal Constitutional, started running some articles questioning the veracity of the test scores that have been reported over the years that showed the kids were doing fantastic. Those series of articles prompted the governor at the time to launch a state-led investigation. That investigation took a number of years, and what it found led to an indictment, which led to the trial, which led to the convictions. What it found was really eye-opening. It found that there were, somewhere in the neighborhood of at least 175 educators involved in what they call a massive conspiracy to, say, defraud, for a better word, on the students' test scores. They were erasing test scores, erasing answers, and putting in correct answers so that the test scores would show great performance when, in fact, the kids were not performing as well as the test scores indicated. Out of all of the people who the investigators said were involved in this massive criminalized activity, only 11, or actually 12, went to trial. Most of the people who were identified managed to get involved and accept a plea bargain. I don't know what the outcome of the plea bargain was, what the deal was that they got, but they did get a plea bargain. 12 teachers refused a plea bargain, and at the time, the judge who was conducting the plea bargain pretrial indicated to them, if you don't accept this plea bargain, then the consequences of going to trial and being found guilty will be severe. There was a warning, in essence, that either take this deal, or if you're found guilty, all hell is going to rain down. Well, that's what happened. During the trial, two people died. The superintendent, who had said she was totally innocent, she died, and that was most recently. And another person died during the trial so that they were not involved in the final verdict. And the trial itself was prosecuted. The defendants were prosecuted under what is known as the RICO statute. And for those of you who don't know what the RICO statute is, let me give you a very brief thing here. RICO statute was created by the federal government and laws passed in to enable this to go after organized crime figures who operated massive criminal enterprises. And particularly at the time, they wanted to go after John Gotti out of New York, the Teflon Don, who was suspected of had killed or even participating in killing dozens of people, running this entire huge enterprise, and et cetera. And so that's what RICO was created for, was to go after some of the most serious criminal figures and their operations. When it was announced that the prosecutor was going to use the RICO statute, that in itself sent shockwaves through the country. Talking about overkill much, this was immediately, flags were raised over why is this guy going after these teachers, not organized crime members, not Hell's Angels and other groups that RICO statute has been used to decimate. They were going after teachers. And what were they going after teachers for? Erasing, using pencil with an eraser on it to erase answers on a test, a standardized test. Not a gun, but an eraser. So, from day one, there was controversy swirling around the trial, swirling around why they denied their right to the plea bargain, why the prosecutor was going after them under RICO, why the judge even allowed the prosecutor to proceed under RICO. And the evidence, everything was under a cloud of suspicion for many of us, most of us. And hence, when this decision came out this past April 1st, all hell hit the fan. Now, what happened, at least for me, was I immediately started cataloging all of the blog reports, teacher comments that I could find, and newspaper reports from corporate media to throughout the social media, the grassroots media, and et cetera. And what I discovered was there was very little chatter over this. And I was surprised because this has major implications. But teachers were not coming to the defense of the defendants. They were not outraged over the verdict. And when I say not, I'm saying out of the supposedly 5 million union teachers and non-union teachers, I don't know what that number is, it was very, very little chatter. Then I ran across a comment from a teacher from the Midwest who said she was a white teacher, and she was outraged over the fact that other teachers were not as outraged and not coming forth expressing their outrage. So she was outraged over the outcome of the trial, but more outraged over the lack of teachers' indignation over what had happened to a fellow teacher, being totally guilty or not. And that is what prompted me to take even further note, because she was basically saying the same thing that I was saying, that I wasn't seeing the outrage. And hence, I decided to do the show this week as opposed to later on. As those of you who follow us weekly, you know we were in the middle of a long series on the Common Core. So that brings you to where we are today. And I turn to Adele because of her involvement and what some would call, if it had been fully investigated, would have been the most massive cheating scandal of all time. And with that, Adele, I'm bringing you in because you're one of the people who questioned whether or not the Atlanta scandal was the biggest of all time.
Definitely. I do agree with you that if my case were to be picked up, and there is a possibility that my case could still be picked up, it was dismissed without prejudice. But we all know everything has politics embedded in it. But I do think that if someone took a very earnest look at what happened and to an extent continues to happen in DCPS, it would make Atlanta look like child's play. One of the situations that I ran into even before I actually walked in and saw with my own eyes what was going on, there was some scuttlebutt, to use a very layman's term. When I first arrived in D.C., when I would, you know, say to people in DCTS, oh, I'm the new principal of noise, they would give me a look like, oh, you're the new principal of noise. What I learned quickly, besides the fact, unfortunately, that wholesale, most of my students could not read or write to save their life. And remember, I had preschool through eighth grade. Some of my eighth graders, Dr. Miller, were 15 years old, and they could not put together a sound paragraph. Let's not even talk about, you know, an argument or counter-argument. I'm simply stating main idea, details, closing statement. Could not do it. So I found out quickly through experience, let's say 3 weeks in to school, that there was something amiss, because definitely I had worked in blue ribbon schools. I knew what it took to make a school blue ribbon. So when I saw the lack of instruction and the lack of student output or student ability to just the basic task, I knew that something was wrong. Like I said before, when I would say to people in D.C., oh, I'm the new principal of noise, well, look at me askance, like, ooh, does she know what she's getting into? So one of the things that happened, and I talk about it a little bit in the case, is that my direct supervisor is the principal of noise. And so what DC did, and I think it was very strategic on their part, they put the person who pretty much was the mastermind behind the erasure as my direct boss. So the person that I had to report to, I could not share my concern because I could not totally trust this person because they were the principal before I came in. And so, you know, there were lots of things that happened. DC, quote unquote, investigated some claims. And I chuckle because I say to people, that's the equivalent of your 16-year-old stealing the family car and wrecking it and comes home. And you say, oh, Johnny, you wrecked the family car. What would you like your punishment to be? It's just incredulous to me. And, of course, when they, quote unquote, investigated the claims, they came out clean. So I definitely agree with you when you say that many teachers are not outraged. And having been a principal, and I've been blessed. I have worked in urban school districts. I have worked in suburban school districts. You know, when you are in the schoolhouse and you are dealing with the day-to-day, you very seldom have a chance to look outside your fishbowl. And so I think that is done by design, because if educators really had the opportunity to look at the national picture and the international picture, they would be up in arms every day. But then that goes to another point of, you know, lots of us like our lives. We like our homes. We like to be able to pay college tuition. One thing that I talked about in my response to the Atlanta verdict, and let me just say,
Let me stop you there.
Okay.
Because I want to bring in, we have a caller.
Okay.
We'll bring in a caller and we'll go back to what you, where you left
off. Okay.
Okay. It's, this is Mark Nason.
Hey, Mark.
Hello? How are you?
Hello, Mark. How are you?
This is great. I've listened to both of your presentations with great interest. And I will continue to listen. I just want to throw one piece of information into the mix here, which is there was another scandal that was not investigated at all, which is what happened in Houston when Rod Page was the superintendent, and which paved the way to his becoming Secretary of Education under George W. Bush. The so-called Houston miracle, which under scrutiny proved to be entirely fabricated.
And Mark, wasn't that also used as justification for NCLB? Was that used as part of what? Yeah, okay. Right.
But part of the issue here is that their NCLB actually made things worse because it added to the stakes for teachers and principals and superintendents of improving test scores and made it a precondition for advancing your career. So it vastly increased the incentive to take young people who are living in poverty and stress of the most extreme kind and produce some sort of miraculous results in improving their test scores. And anybody who is an educator, who has worked with young people who have stressful lives, know there are no miracles. It's a labor-intensive, slow process to build people's skill levels up. Yes, it can be done, but I've never seen it done miraculously and quickly. And so we're asking educators to essentially do what's impossible, because we've chosen schools to be the vehicle to equalize a society when every other social institution, from policing to our housing market to our employment market to our tax system, maximizes inequality. And that pressure and that burden on teachers and school administrators is toxic. That's my perspective. The
Mark,
Atlanta educators were responding to a toxic situation in an unprincipled way, but the people who created the toxic situation get off.
Right.
Okay. That's precisely where I want to go towards. Mark, can you stay with us for a while?
Of course.
Okay, cool. All
right, I'm here.
Back to you, Adele.
Okay.
You were talking about your situation that you walked into,
right,
and what you end up discovering. Take it from there.
And so I agree with Dr. Nathan. Mark is absolutely right. And so what I was going to say was, I don't want us to jump the gun. You know, I hear a lot of people, and 20 years is a lifetime when you are in prison. They have not received their actual sentencing. So I always say to people, well, let's be cautious, because we could wake up and they have time served and they go home. And Mark and I have had this conversation offline. We agree to disagree. Having them put in that situation, Dr. Miller, I had a decision to make. And let me tell you, that year that I had in D.C., literally almost caused me a nervous breakdown. When I tell you I was harassed professionally, like the stories that I could tell would make people cringe, all because certain people that I thought I could trust, the night that I found the situation, I called and said, look, this is what I just saw. I need your help. I learned later those were the wrong people to call, because then they really put the pressure on to me. At the end of the day, we are talking about children's lives. And once again, I am so passionate about this because I was that little black girl sitting in poverty, and I couldn't bounce basketball. I can't hold a note to save my life, but I knew how to study. And I had teachers back in the 70s who cared about me. And so they gave me the best education they knew how. No, they didn't have the pressure of NCLB. I get that. But at the end of the day, those educators in Atlanta had a choice to make. They could either become part of the problem or part of the solution. Now, me doing what I did, which is I kept my head low, I tried to run a school as best as I knew how, but I knew, Dr. Miller, that at the end of the year, I was getting out of D.C. That was my only clear plan. I had no idea about filing the lawsuit. Let me tell you what took me to lawyers, because certain higher-ups in D.C., who will remain nameless at this point, said, oh, she did it for the money, or Adele's doing it for the money. I only went to a lawyer because I didn't want to lose my teaching certificate. So I said, let me cover my derriere and go talk to a lawyer.
Excuse me for a second. Derriere, we don't know what that means. Do you mean Cover your ass.
Yes, okay, let me cover my ass. I'm trying to put my EDD to work. You see, I'm trying to use it.
Yeah, okay.
So basically, you know, do I think they deserve 20 years? Not at all. Do I think they should be prosecuted under RICO? No, not the, but remember, this is unprecedented. This has never happened before. The irony of that is the same people who are enforcing these laws are part of the problem. Like, the politicians are the problem. Everyone's a problem because they're all looking at teachers, and we all know the problem is poverty. When we solve the finance, when we solve this caste system that we have in America that's never going to go away, then we'll see some real results, but we'll talk about it another time. So basically what I'm saying, because I don't want to suck up all of the time, I had a decision to make. And let me tell you something. I made $130,000 when I was in D.C. I remember Michelle Reese said to me, your base salary is $110,000. We're going to give you a $20,000 signing bonus. I thought I was the Barry Bonds. Like, who the hell gives a principal a $20,000 signing bonus? I know, I now realize that was hush money. Who the hell walks away from $130,000? That was like, oh, okay, we know we're going to put a devil in this situation. Let's keep her quiet. I walked away from that because I knew I could not be part of the problem. As I speak to you now, I'm unemployed. Why am I unemployed? Not because I don't have a stellar resume that's about to become a CV. Not because I'm not good at what I do. Because if you ask anyone who's ever worked with me or, as you know, I was their supervisor, I'm an instructional leader. I'm not finding a job for two reasons. Local superintendents don't like what I have to say. I found that out. And two, I can't be a cheerleader for Common Core. Park is the worst thing ever invented. And I can't be the company woman who goes into a school or a school district and says, yeah, everything that the feds have put down in regards to education is great. Let's, you know, figure out how to make it work. I can't do it.
Wow.
She sounds something like us, doesn't she?
Oh, my God. Listening to you talk will make me fight even harder.
Thank you.
You're exactly the kind of person our children need.
You make me cry, Mark.
Your integrity makes you unhireable. This is where we are in the United States of America, spring 2015. The best teachers and the best supervisors are being driven out because of their integrity. What does this say about the people who are setting education policy in this country? Unbelievable.
Yes. All right. Now, back to the verdict. And my original reason for deciding to do the show now as opposed to later. And that was the silence that I was hearing. Yes, you can hear silence. The lack of comments, lack of outrage over the verdict, as I said earlier, using RICO and the possibility of 20 to 35 years each, and on and on and on. And so my first question that was prompted by this teacher, white teacher from the Midwest, was this silence complicity? Our teachers, and particularly white teachers, black teachers too, I haven't seen a hell of a lot from black teachers either on this. So black, white, green, purple, Martian, what have you, the silence, the lack of...
Well, one thing I can tell you, my cohort of race scholars in the university are outraged about this. In other words, the people...
They haven't said shit about it.
No, it's all over Twitter.
But let me tell you, from a K-12 perspective, it's not complicity, it's fear. People are fearful of having a voice in education because when you have a voice and when you speak up, bad things happen to you. Because we have VAM, value-added measure. And if you as a teacher speak out, I as an administrator, who my job is to make sure you put forth what the district is supporting, I can come in and easily say, oh, that observation was horrible, and here's why. Oh, your second observation was horrible, and here's why. And before you know it, you're out of a job. So it's not that teachers aren't concerned. It's not that they don't have a voice. They are fearful of being heard. That's the problem.
Absolutely. The only reason, Adele is absolutely right. The only reason I started speaking out was because of the massive intimidation of teachers and principals in the Bronx.
Yes.
Once the testing pressures rose up and the community history projects I was doing were driven out of the schools. And the teachers and the principals said, Mark, this is wrong. We can't speak out. You can.
Right.
You're a tenured professor. They can't touch you. So we don't have free speech. Teachers and principals in this country do not have free speech.
Not at all. Not at all.
Okay,
one of my own answers and questions was that, was the Atlanta verdict, or actually the charges, the arrest, the trial, and the verdict, all meant to strike fear into teachers, as well as indirectly parents, and especially people like the opt-out movers and Common Core resistors? Was this meant to strike fear across America? And you guys have pretty much answered that question. In your opinion, you think the silence is a product of fear more than anything else. I seem to agree, too, but something that you said, Adele, earlier, and Mark, then you also said about courage and ethics. I mean, people especially on Facebook, hell, you can say all kinds of things under being anonymous, false names, the whole nine yards. I didn't see that, and that bothered me.
There's going to be a great article coming out tomorrow by a young African-American historian named Stacy Patton, which goes after the civil rights leadership and the white parents in the opt-out movement for different reasons. The civil rights leadership, because of their complicity with the testing, the Common Core, the VAM, and the test-based teacher evaluations, which produced this, and the white opt-out movement activists, who didn't care as long as it was happening to other people's children. Because what was being done to the children of the Bronx and other inner-city neighborhoods with school closings and teacher firings and turning recess and gym into test prep, did anybody say a word in the suburbs about when those things were happening? No. Did the civil rights leaders say anything about that when that was happening? No. So now, these teachers who did something wrong are being made an example of to send a message. Nobody questions the testocracy without paying a penalty. Even though I say what they did was wrong, I agree with Adele, educators should have integrity. There is so little integrity with the people running education in this country that singling out these teachers on a RICO charge, you know, especially since what happened in D.C. with somebody politically connected is overlooked. Something is rotten in the state of Denmark. Is that Hamlet or something? But anyway.
Yes, it's Hamlet.
Here we are.
Okay, now, you pretty much answered that question in terms of your perspective, and I think Adele, hearing you agreeing, you also answered the same question. Oh, and by the way, Mark, that person whose article is going to come out tomorrow, I am going to issue an invitation to come on the show that I have been working on for.
Her name is Stacy Patton. She's a writer for the Chronicle of Higher Ed. She's brilliant.
I know her. Right. I'm going to do a show on the civil rights issue because I am so pissed off with the black folks who have. Turn. I'll stop at that because I'm about to say.
Yeah, right.
But you know they turn their back because they're in bed with strange bedfellows, and so
that's
once you make those
That's a polite, you know, I'm almost at my PhD, you know, doctorate level. I don't want to hear that shit, okay? I want to call it what it is.
Now, you're younger than us, right? You don't remember the terms we used in the 60s for people like that.
Oh, well, you know, I would say I was not even a twinkle in the eye in the 60s.
Okay. All right. But anyway, now, moving on. And you've already answered this, but give me quick answers. Was justice or injustice served in the verdict?
Injustice. There are so many CEOs and politicians and federal agents that should be behind bars because of the deals that they've made behind closed doors to extend the plight of black and brown children. It was an injustice. Even though I know what they did was wrong and I wish they would have made a different choice, I get it. Everyone does not have the faith that I had when I walked away. Let's remind everybody, I'm still unemployed, but I'm in my house, thank you, God. So I get that, but it was a huge injustice. There's no way that there should just be those black and brown educators sitting there facing jail time. It's ludicrous.
Okay, Mark, give me 30 seconds.
I second that emotion, quote Smokey and the Miracles.
One of my favorites. That's another reason why I think I like you, is that we are contemporaries to the bone. I love Smokey, too.
Yeah.
All right, now, next question here. Was this the verdict, and it all started with the trial, and I think we've answered this, but I want a definitive answer. Was it a pushback to the resistance movement itself? Those of us who are against high-stakes standardized testing, we're against Common Core, we're against the top-down to the bottom structure of, that's what I call it all the time, the neoliberal agenda, the whole nine yards. Was this in any way, in either of your view, a pushback and a message? Give me 30 seconds, and we'll move on to the next question.
It's called selective prosecution. Do you see anybody prosecuting Eva Moskowitz for putting so much pressure on her children in her charter schools to pass tests that they pee in their pants? That's another response, but that one is acceptable. There's choices made. You go after the people who are most vulnerable, who are not politically connected with huge contributors.
You go after people who are most vulnerable, you go after the people who don't have the political connections, and you go after the people who don't have the wealth to hire the law team that's going to get them off. So you go after the low-hanging fruit, the scapegoats. Absolutely.
The scapegoats. Yes. That's it.
Would you agree with the message, if put into a nutshell, was no Edward Snowden here? Not in our house. House built by.
Oh boy! I didn't think of that.
Walton, Obama, Clinton, one, and who? Clinton two, if she runs and wins, and a whole slew of the Broad and governors and et cetera. Was this a pushback? And was this a message?
The oligarchy spoke.
Okay. Adele?
Definitely push back. But, you know, I'm still, you and I have had the conversation, and I'll bring it up quickly. You know, I'm still torn because we don't know who the players are. We think we know who the players are. So who are we really pushing back against? Because the people that are really pulling the puppet strings and making the real life affecting decisions, we don't know their names or their faces. So what are we pushing back against? Who are we pushing back against? That's my question.
Okay.
I think we have to push for the children. And as you know, old-fashioned as that is, we start with people like Adele, whose whole life has been for the children, and say, you're the person who knows what this is about. And we have to put people like you back in the schools and back in leadership and have your voice heard.
The only thing I would disagree with, and thank you for that comment, don't put me back in the school. I cannot affect, I cannot make meaningful change in the school. It's got to be something broader. But I do agree with you that people, and you know, the sad thing about it is I have friends, really good friends, who say to me, don't tag me in that post on Facebook. Don't mention me in this. Like, I can't risk being associated with you. And so part of me makes that sad because how can you know me and know my story? But I get it. Once again, it goes back to that culture of fear. When I have friends that I've known for 20 years who are great educators who say, that was a great post you posted about Pearson and how they're just devastating us and nobody really pays attention, but please don't tag me in that because I have a mortgage to pay.
Okay, now, next question.
So I can't be in the school, Mark. Thank you.
You know, Adele, you're becoming much more like Mark in that 30 seconds doesn't mean 30 seconds. When I say it goes into like 30 minutes. 30 seconds. But when you get your doctorate, you'll learn 30 seconds mean 30 seconds, okay?
Well, you know, when you're working with your doctorate, 30 seconds does become 30 minutes. Okay, I'll let it go. I'll let it go.
Okay, okay. You know, I'm going to talk to the chair of your committee and see maybe you don't get your... Anyway, okay, now, next question here. Big picture. Now, we'll make that a last question. This question, the winners and losers. And this is a game, like the Game of Thrones here, that they're playing with our lives and the children's lives and et cetera. So my question becomes, who are the winners and losers? You got students, parents, districts, states, teachers. On the one hand,
one good thing that has come out of this is the race scholars I know who have been pretty much silent on issues of school reform are so outraged by this verdict that they're finally going to take on the civil rights leaders pushing the testing. For the first time, I'm feeling like this group is going to come forward. Then, you know, I'm talking about maybe around 100 people around the country. You know, these are, you know, predominantly African-American scholars at top universities. This verdict outraged them. And maybe, just maybe, their stepping forward is, over time, going to change the climate a little bit for the people who don't have that freedom of speech.
But I think it was a mistake. My hope, Mark, is that they come forward in a concerted, strategic, sustaining manner, and not because this is the hot topic this week and, you know, they want to get their next article published to make tenure. Like, let's do this due diligence because, as Dr. Miller said, this has been going on for 30 years. This didn't happen yesterday, last year, a decade ago. This has been a very strategic plan that the 1% has put together to solidify certain things in our society. So we can fight all day long, but if it is not strategic and sustaining, I don't want to waste my time with it. I don't have time for a photo op or a hanger-on. I really need us to get in there and do the work.
But you haven't answered the question. Who are the winners and losers? On the one hand, you got the corporate, what I call corporate state power elite and their Machiavellian agenda. Adele, if you listen to the show, I use the word Machiavellian agenda at the very beginning of the show to tell you what the show is all about. And hopefully when you get your doctorate, you will then be able to listen to the show and get it. Now, that's one group. And on the other side are us, the 99 percenters. So who are the winners and losers coming from this?
We're the winners because they overplayed their hand this time.
Oh, wow.
And
wow. Touché.
Just like Cuomo did in New York with his teacher evaluations, they woke up a sleeping giant.
Mark, let me stop you there. Mark, let me stop you because I am so blanking pissed with you folks in New York, and I know you are too. I know you left one organization because they didn't endorse and support Zephyr and went back to Cuomo. I understand that. But look, you guys, you voted for the asshole. You knew what he was like.
You knew what was going to happen if he got in, and he is doing to you guys, and I call this, you guys are being screwed, this time, without a kiss. The first time you got screwed, he gave you a kiss. You're getting screwed this time without a kiss. And same with the people, and I guess you can hear my voice, it all jumped up an octave or two, in Chicago. They got screwed the first time with a kiss. Now they're going to get screwed a second time without a kiss. So the winners and the losers, when you want to say that and use New York as an example, one of the few times that I take exception to what you said. But I see where you're coming from.
The only thing is we're going to have 250,000 families opting out as opposed to 60,000 last year. And that is coming from the ground up. So I think social movements sometimes need to lose to win. Lose in the short run to win in the long run.
I love it when your PhDs do that thing that you just did. Adele, what's your take? Because we got another question, then we're out.
I promise it'll be 30 seconds. Definitely the students, but the communities at large are the losers. You know, Mark is such a fan of gentrification. Ha, ha, ha. you know, and, you know, gentrification has its own, you know, ugly head to rear. But the kids are losers. Like, once again, let me just remind you, I'm that little black girl sitting in poverty. The only way I got to the point of Michelle Reed offering me $130,000 is because I had a solid public school education. The winners are the charter school people. The winners are, you know, the senator that has a girlfriend that works for a textbook company. So, yeah, go sell this school district a textbook that they don't need or don't want. But, you know, I'm going to rub your back, you rub mine. So, definitely, once again, people who we see, but more importantly, the part that kind of really motivates me to have my voice heard is the people we don't see. We need to get to the people that are the Machiavellians who are really doing the dirt. That's what we need to get to. So they're the winners. And unfortunately, our little brown and black babies are the losers. And, you know, let's just pray for them every night because they need it.
Oh, okay. Now, let me, we got about 3 minutes here. Let me go out with my comments here. One, Adele, Mark doesn't know this, but he kind of does know this. I have asked or indicated to him that I want he and I to do a show on gentrification. And in
Absolutely.
My message to Mark, Mark, I said to you, I thought you and I were the best two people in the country to talk about gentrification.
Yeah, I even have a gentrification rap.
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
Now.
I have a gentrification rap for you.
Okay, now, let me move on. Mark, the 100 black scholars, I would love to get them into a group, either on Facebook, because we can share our indignation over what Urban League, NAACP, and he mentioned Al Sharpton, who's a joke to me. That's right. I said it, Al. You are a fucking joke. Now, and people like that, the Trojan horses, I would love for us to get in a group because I've been planning a major effort to tell all those people to kiss my ass. But anyway, I would love to be part of that. All right, now, secondly, what each of you have said pretty much goes along with what I was hoping would happen with this broadcast. We need to wake up people, and we need to recognize who the enemy is, their tactics, their strength, find their weak points, and we need to come together with our voices, with our actions, and form a formidable army that we don't have yet, not even close.
Correct.
And then be able to take the war to them. Put it on their doorstep, being able to kick their asses like they have been kicking ours for the last 35 years.
Yes.
So with that, this has been a great show. Adele, even though you haven't listened to me in the past, to remedy that, Mark, tell her. I'm not going to let her forget it. Mark, you know me. Tell her.
I know God Almighty. You're on his radar screen. God help you.
to remedy that, I'm going to invite you back to a couple more shows that I have in mind for you, okay?
Even though I'm a lonely ADD, only working on her EDD, see how I keep throwing the letters around? Yeah, I'm honored.
One of the few times in my life I'll do the forgive and forget stuff, which I don't believe in. You forgive and forget, you turn the other cheek, you get smacked on the other side. You know, that to me doesn't make any sense. Yes, you're going to do that. With that, I know that I'm going to be in trouble. Our time is up. Folks, this has been really a good show. I hope you listen. I hope you go to the archives. Hope you spread the word, because a lot of what was said here today is so crucial to us in the war. Have a good Sunday, everyone. Mark and Adele, I will talk to you guys individually as soon as I can get hold to you.
Okay,
Have a great afternoon.
Join us again next time as we explore and become aware of the most pressing problem of our time, education, corporate America, and their unholy alliance.